Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Elvis Presley and Return to Sender. Joining us on the line now is Todd Slaughter. He's the owner and organizer of the official Elvis Presley fan club of Great Britain for nearly six decades. He's met Elvis three times, once when he presented him with an award for NME magazine, and another time Elvis gave him an award for having been president of the UK fan club for 10 years. Todd stayed in touch with Elvis's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, until his death in 1997. Todd has recently decided to retire as soon as he finds the right person to become the custodian of Elvis's legacy in Britain. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us. So you've got such an interesting history and journey and connection with Elvis. I'm really interested to know how the whole thing started. How did you acquire the fan club at the beginning?
Well, I was involved with the Elvis Presley fan club as a member, if you will, from about 1962. The fan club itself was formed in 1957. It was then bought by a guy called Albert Hand that had a series of magazines, Elvis Monthly being one of them and the first one that he published. And then into the mix came people like Robert Stigwood, who decided to contact his little publishing company and do a Pop Weekly, and there was a Mods Monthly and Fury Monthly. I mean, it was a whole catalogue of music-based titles. But Elvis Monthly is the one that has survived throughout the years until the distributors over here, which is a company called W.H. Smith, decided that, and it no longer at that time sold more, less than 30,000 copies, they discontinued distributing it. So we then sort of concentrated more on the fan club and the fan club magazine. But how I became involved was in 1962, which is a long time ago, the first communication satellite was launched. It was called Telstar. And it enabled people in North America to contact the United Kingdom and all of Europe for 20 minutes every orbit. It was not a geostationary satellite. It was one that orbited the world. And I thought, here was the chance for Elvis Presley, who was tied up with film contracts in the States, to appear on television on this side of the pond. And, well, it took 10 years to happen, but it eventually did when Elvis made a TV program called Hello from Hawaii. But I'm quite proud of that. Now, by about 1967, I had the opportunity to take over the Elvis Presley fan club from Albert Hand, who had bought it. And I bought it from him. Now, I had a choice that day. I could either run the Elvis Presley fan club or go illegal and sit on a boat on the North Sea called Radio Caroline when the Marine Offences Bill became law. And I hadn't got the nerve to do the latter, so I did the former. And then ran the Elvis Presley fan club throughout my life until now. Now I'm really geriatric and old and feeble. And I don't really need to work for 40 hours a week for nothing. And at the same time, I am passionate about keeping the brand and the activities of the fan club going. Now, had I been a younger person now, I could do all sorts of things. But the days of me tap dancing and riding a one-wheel bike have long since gone. So, you know, I'm looking for a new custodian. Now, you might think that would be easy, but it isn't. I have possibly, in the last 6 or 7 months, spoken to probably 60 or 70 people who have sort of queued up saying, I would like to take over the Elvis Presley fan club. And when they see the amount of work that is entailed, you don't see them for dust.
Mm.
I mean, what they really want is the position.
Yeah, the kudos.
But not the work.
Yes.
And it is hard work. It's enjoyable work. But, you know, when you are of failing health, poor eyesight, and trying to buy a guide dog, you will then realise that it's not the easiest thing to depart from. And that's what I'm faced with. Mm. In fact, hopefully within the end of today or this week, we might have a solution. Because there has to be one. You know, we're still in the 20th century. We produce a magazine that goes out to our members. Now, what we should be doing is doing what everybody else seems to do, and that's go totally online. We are online. We have up to 250,000 people read our social media every month. But there's a difference between reading social media and paying for it. So there has to be a way of generating something. It's like your radio station, for instance. Without any ads, you'd be out of business.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And we don't have any ads.
No, exactly. And people have been on at you for a long time to write a book, a kind of behind the scenes book about your experiences running the club. And in the last year or so, with lockdown and everything, you've done it. Elvis and More, The Spoils of War, it's called.
Yes, I'm really proud of my little book. It is what it is. It's a story about me, my childhood, how I got involved in Elvis, right up until, you know, more or less the present day and what the future might or could be. You know, it's a sad tale in many respects and quite funny in others. When remembering my childhood. I mean, the reason it is called The Spoils of War is I am a spoil of war. My birth mother was an anti-aircraft gunner in Belgium, and my biological father, who I've obviously not been able to trace, is classed as spoils of war because I was fathered by a GI during the Second World War. And as a consequence, they were not allowed to put their names onto my birth certificate. So my American class is Spoils of War.
Yes.
So that's what I am.
Perfect. And of course, the book talks a lot about Elvis and your personal relationship with Elvis. You met him 3 times. That first time you met him must have been a very strange and bizarre and incredible experience, was it?
Well, it was. But what you also have to take on board, though, is that I did some work for a radio station over here called Radio Luxembourg. And as a consequence, I had met most stars that you could have thought of during that day, from the Beatles to the Stones to Ike and Tina Turner, Sonny and Cher. I'd met all the Merseybeat bands and groups. So I knew what I was letting myself in for.
Mm.
I knew why, because I was also writing for Pop Weekly and other titles that, you know, I could access folks, but none of it, to be fair, prepared me for meeting Elvis Presley.
So what happened then? Talk us through it.
Well, you know, there was a group of us. There was about 12 of us backstage at the Las Vegas Hilton, as was. And strangely enough, Elvis came into the room. Now, normally when you meet a show business person, they're larger than life. There's an aurora around their head and a 20th Century Fox type of fanfare. When Elvis came into the room, a lot of people, including myself, hadn't realized that he'd walked in. So he was very unassuming. You know, he came to life on stage, but off stage, he was, if you like, there to meet the high rollers who were gaming in the casinos. And part of the deal was if you spent or lost a lot of money, you got to meet the turn, and the turn whilst we were there, of course, was Elvis Presley.
And the last time you met him, you noticed that he looked kind of tired and pale, and it was sadly 6 weeks later when he died.
Yeah, I mean, what had happened is we had been taking 200 or 300 people once, sometimes twice a year, to the Las Vegas Hilton and staying in Vegas for 6, 7, 8 days. So in other words, we were taking over 10% of the showroom. Now, the Hilton tolerated that initially because they got global publicity for this bunch of limeys that appeared from nowhere and came dressed in Marks and Spencer's clothing and queued amongst the high rollers to get in to see Elvis Presley. But eventually the Hilton were getting a bit miffed about this. So Colonel Parker said to me about a year beforehand, I think we're going to have to try and get your people to see Elvis on tour. And as it turned out, we went to see Elvis on tour and saw the last two concerts that Elvis performed. And then, as you said, 6 weeks later, 7 weeks later, he died. Now, people have said to me, you know, did he look pretty wretched? Well, to be fair, no, he didn't. Now, if you saw all the press pictures of Elvis at that time, I mean, he didn't look very good. But if you're a picture editor and you want the story, you're not going to look for a good picture of Elvis. You're going to look for a bad one. And that happens with every star even today.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
Yeah, because it's a story. It's not a story. Everyone looks clean and clear. But, you know, when I met Elvis, there's film of that on YouTube just a few weeks before he died. I mean, you know, he didn't look the Elvis that he looked 10 years earlier, but he didn't look as if he was near to death. But sadly, as it turned out, he was.
And amazing that you struck up quite a friendship with Colonel Parker as well. And when you yourself had a heart transplant in 1994, he rang you every day to check on you. That's amazing.
Yes, I mean, when I tell people, they don't quite believe it. I mean, Colonel Parker has had this reputation of being this Svengali. You know, he was no more a Svengali than any other manager. In fact, if you compare what he did compared to the British managers who looked after the early pop stars over here, you know, the Billy Furies, Marty Wilds and the like, these guys went out for 15 quid a week. So did Cliff. They all did. Joe Brown got a tenner. And for that tenner, he was at the end of the pier doing two shows a night. All his record sale royalties were going to his manager. So, you know, at the beginning of all of this in the UK, these guys earned nothing. When Elvis appeared with Colonel Parker doing the rounds and then appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show for 10 minutes, he got $50,000, which was more than Ed Sullivan was being paid.
Gosh.
When he appeared on the Frank Sinatra Show, he got $180,000, which is more than Sinatra was getting. So, you know, I don't think he did too bad out of Colonel Parker. Now, don't get me wrong, Colonel Parker made some horrendous mistakes during his career. The major one, not touring Elvis outside of the United States. But it never happened. To be fair, we really don't know why it never happened. And all this nonsense about Colonel Parker being an illegal immigrant. You know, when he first went to the States in the 1920s, and he didn't go in the steerage of a ship, you know, eating dead rats. I mean, he worked his way across the Atlantic. But when he arrived in the States, I would say 70% of all the people that arrived in the States were classed at that time as illegal immigrants. Because that's the way the United States was built. So, you know, it's a good story. He's an illegal immigrant, dare to leave the USA. That's a nonsense.
Interesting. Well, people must read your book. If they're an Elvis fan, then they'll find the book fascinating. We can put the book on our website so listeners can get a copy from there. And if they're interested in getting hold of the fan club, then they can contact you via the website, can't they?
Yes, they can, which is simply elvispresleyfanclub.com.
Great stuff. Todd, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really lovely to chat with you. And thank you for sharing your stories. And good luck with selling it. Hope you get a really good offer.
I wish I was where you are. Have a lovely day and thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.